Lane bench. There's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hey, it is a Thursday. Let's get this hour of Flames Talk underway. It's Thursday, November 7th. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. With Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, my name is Pat Steinberg. Hello, Vix.
Hello, Patrick.
How we doing?
Oh, you got some energy. We got some juice. Let's go.
Let's do more energy than I had in the first hour of Flames Talk. I'll tell you that much. First hour got me into hour
two. Don't sell yourself short. You've got this.
Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast, that's where you can get Flames Talk. And, of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, and maybe coming soon to other places as well. Let's kick off this hour by talking goaltending. Let's kick off this hour by diving a little deeper on Dustin Wolf this season and more. It's a Thursday. It's time to say hello to our goaltending guru. Kevin Woodley joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Kev from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com in Vancouver. Mr. Woodley, how are we on this Thursday?
I'm about to just go run upstairs and find a couple of Red Bulls so I can match the energy level you guys are bringing. So I'm going to try and get up. I was a little subdued until I heard that intro, but let's go.
Can I make a suggestion? Try some watermelon flavored sparkling water. It'll get everything you need going.
Sorry, watermelon water?
Watermelon sparkling water.
Okay. I'm making a note here. That's interesting.
He does. Vix crushes the flavored water. I've noticed that recently.
It's a European thing.
Very, very, like the flavored,
fancy.
Flavored non-alcoholic seltzers. That's what he's got going on. I like it.
Oh, I put some alcohol in this.
What happens when you send this guy over to the World Championships every year, right? Yeah,
exactly. He becomes a little honorary Euro with his...
I just like to class things up.
With his jorts. He loves the jean shorts.
Okay,
now.
That is enough out of you. Jorts are fine. They're stylish. I will not hear anything else.
I didn't say whether they were or were not. I just was making an observation. That's all. Okay, Kev, well, let's get this thing on track.
Yeah, can we get it back on the rails? Because I'm trying to picture Aaron in jorts, or I'd rather not picture.
Yeah, I'd rather you didn't.
Hey, Dustin Wolf's going to get the start Thursday night in Boston for the first time this season. He'll start in consecutive games. He also picked up the win Tuesday in Montreal. A lot of excitement in this market, Kev, when it comes to Dustin and his start to the season. Now he gets to play Montreal and Boston on the road consecutively. I'm just what are some of the numbers telling you now as we approach the first quarter of the season? What some of your research telling us on Dustin Wolf and his start to his first full NHL campaign?
Well, it's been a little up and down, right? Like, I know everybody's excited about the raw numbers early on and the save percentage was really high, but as I told you guys, the expected, the environment, how good they were defensively in front of him was also really high. And so inevitably, as one came down, and whether, you know, from game to game, a couple maybe tougher games defensively or tougher environments, the other one was going to come down too. And we've seen that a little bit. But I thought that bounce back in Montreal in particular was one of his better games. And statistically, it matches up as well. Like, the Canadians created 10 high danger shots, which, again, like, this isn't a criticism of the Flames defense. I think for the most part this season, they probably exceeded expectations. And this is actually more the anomaly, more the exception than the rule, for a team to get into the double digits like that. And he was a full goal plus above expected, which is, you know, in a 3-2 win, we're almost into stolen win territory there. So that's a good effort in a bright spotlight for Dustin Wolf and a nice answer to, you know, the Utah game. And so I think you can expect a little more of that as the season goes on. Like, there's a lot of lessons still to be learned for a young goaltender still getting his feet wet in the National Hockey League. Overall, both guys right now are right around expected for the year. And that's not a bad thing. Dustin's just slightly below on the season, and Bladar's just slightly above. There are actually only 28 goaltenders in the league that are above or expected right now. So both your guys are giving you just around league average goaltending. And that's not bad. That's okay, especially where you are as a team. And so again, I think there will be little bumps and there'll be peaks and valleys. There's a lot of different, you know, traffic. We saw that in the Utah game. Like, that's one of the hardest things for a young goaltender to sort of learn how to manage at the National Hockey League level. Look here in Vancouver, everybody was ready to anoint Artur Shelov, and he's lost the job to Kevin Lankinen in part because he's really struggled to manage traffic at the National Hockey League level. And it takes some time. It takes some reps. So I was interested to see, to hear that they're going back to him after giving Vladar back-to-back starts. We had talked last week about how much I liked alternating. But you reward Vladar, rightfully so, for the shutout against you know, his old playing partner in Jacob Markstrom. And you do the same for Dustin Wolf coming off a stolen win. I don't mind that at all.
You know, it's funny, they're into Buffalo on Saturday. I'm curious just in terms of career comparables and trajectory. Like, do you see any parallels with Wolf and Devin Levi with the Sabres?
Well, the parallels will be size and the questions that come with it. In terms of career paths, right, Dustin had to prove it in the American Hockey League and did, as you know, all the awards he piled up down there over the last 3 years. Whereas Levi has been thrown into the spotlight a lot sooner. And again, ups and downs. It's been more downs than ups this season. Last year, by the time the season ended, he actually had numbers that were very similar to Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, and most people just didn't realize it because the environment was tougher. This year, the environment's been a little tougher again, and the performance hasn't been there. Like, Levi has struggled, to be honest, a lot more than I expected so far this season for the Buffalo Sabres. And again, I think that's where the similarity lies, right? Like, this is a tough league and a tough league to learn in. And inevitably, whether you're doing it in your second pro season or your fourth pro season, the best way to learn is actually to do it, like to be in the league and learning with live fire. You just have to be willing to live with some of the ups and downs that comes. I believe in Devin Levi. I've gotten to know him much like Wolf, and I believe he's a really good goaltender and will be a really good goaltender. He's in a down spell right now, but I have faith he'll come out of it. The tough part is anytime this happens to goalies of their size, that's the first thing people point at. So, you know, there's probably a little lesson here. Last year, people wanted him down in the American Hockey League and argued that he wasn't ready. And frankly, by the end of the year, he showed he was more than ready. This year, it started off slowly. I'm not hearing those same conversations around him, maybe in part because they lost James Reimer to waivers, but nothing's changed, right? This is just part of how it goes for a young goalie learning. It's not about his size. It's about all the other things that come with being new to the National Hockey League. It's just that's where the focus tends to go and probably will for both these guys for quite some time until they really establish themselves in their careers.
One last thing on Wolf, and I found this. Jordan Sigalet said this to me off the air, and then he said the same thing on the air. You know how Dustin Wolf always gets this knock for being undersized, so on and so forth. And there are going to be times, like, I think the 5-on-3 against Utah, I think at times he's going to struggle 5-on-3 because traffic's a whole lot harder to move in those situations. And you know, there are going to be times where he's beat up high by really good shooters. That's just, you know, the nature of the way things work. But, you know, Jordan Sigalet said, yeah, that might happen. But how many stops does he make because of his superior athleticism, superior IQ, or ability to go lower than a lot of other goaltenders do? Like, there's kind of a yin and a yang to it, right?
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I've kind of, you know, there's a lot of holes. There's a lot of pucks that go through big goaltenders that won't go through Dustin Wolf.
Yeah.
There are, and I think, you know, I think I've used this line with you guys before. It came from the goaltending coach here in Vancouver, the former goaltending coach here in Vancouver, Ian Clark, that if there's an ideal size, and let's say some would argue 6'2", some would argue 6'3", that anybody on either spectrum has to overcome their size, so to speak, whether you're smaller by 3 inches or bigger by 3 inches. The difference is the guys on the bigger side get all the benefit of the doubt and get every opportunity to do so because we don't recognize that it's the size that contributes to pucks that goes through or maybe a delay in movement or an inability to seal as they go across the ice. but everybody sees the puck that goes over the shoulder of the small goaltender and is quick to point it out. So I think it's a great point. Even just the power and speed that Wolf plays with laterally, there will be saves he makes that other bigger goaltenders don't as a result. It kind of reminds me actually too of the reverse VH conversation, right? Like everybody loves to pick on the technique itself. Anytime a short side goal goes in high from a bad angle. But as Roberto Luongo used to tell me, I'm willing to give the four or five of those, probably even less, up a year, because what people aren't counting is the 60 saves that I make easily that I used to struggle with before I added that technique. And so there's always that element. We tend to look only at goals. And in Wolf's case, it's really easy to pick on that one particular aspect.
So our goaltending guru, Kevin Woodley, joins us Thursdays on Flames Talk. Joins us right now, Steinberg and Aaron Vickers. Vicks?
Kev, Flames are in Boston Thursday. What are you seeing out of that goaltending duo for the Bruins? And are we surprised or are we maybe a little bit understanding that Jeremy Swayman's had a bit of a slow start after missing camp?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing that. And I don't think we are surprised. I think we talked about this, like, I wasn't worried about the lack of a contract right up until camp because he was doing all the captain skates. But once camp hit, once you miss that time, it's really hard to catch up because there's just no substitute for the reps you get against NHL shooters in training camp. And even if it's just two and a half starts for an NHL starter in the preseason, that matters. Everything gets really fast once the season starts, and it's kind of hard to catch up. And you are seeing a little bit of that in his game, combined with the fact that, you know, his expected save percentage is .886 and Korpisalo's is .882. They're both underwater. They're both below expected. Swayman actually slightly worse so far than Korpisalo. Those numbers in terms of the environment and expected, they're not terrible, but they are both below the league average. And that's not something we're used to seeing from the Boston Bruins. They lean more heavily on their goaltenders last season compared to 2 years ago. Anytime you lose Patrice Bergeron, not just as a shutdown center and Selke Trophy candidate, but as a defensive consciousness of the team, that's going to happen. And that regression defensively has increased through the early parts of this season. Now, knowing their coaching staff, it won't take long. And there's been some signs of late that they are starting to stabilize that. But through this first month, the environment has been tougher and the performance have not been as good or as consistent from Swayman. And that, I think, is in part because he missed, training camp's only a couple of days. It's more the preseason and all the reps through that. And I think that's costly for him right now.
What's the difference? Are we having a different conversation if this is a Swayman-Allmark duo versus a Swayman-Korpisalo? Flames will see Korpisalo on Thursday night. Is not having that insulating blanket that is a former Vezina winner in Allmark, is this getting blown up more because you have your number one in Swayman who's struggling and you don't have the guy that you're used to having, I don't want to say backing him up, but being that tandem to prop one guy up when the other guy's faltering a little bit?
Well, I think it would have been really fascinating to see how they handled the start of the season if they did have Linus Allmark. Like, obviously, the pressure to sign Jeremy Swayman would have been very different, yeah. But I think having him come in late, you probably, would have just started Linus Allmark a lot more while Jeremy got up to speed, and you don't have that luxury. And I think the fact that Korpisalo started, it was just a tough start, right? Like that Florida game that everybody watched. It's a national game. And he got torched, and that's a pretty tough way to start. And so that gives you a little less confidence in your other option. So now you're asking Jeremy to get up to speed in short order, which is just oftentimes impossible to do. The reality is it takes time, but you're also feeling like you have to play him more because you don't trust your other option to the same degree you did his predecessor. And so it exacerbates it, I think, for sure. If Linus Allmark was still there, there wouldn't be any pressure to play Jeremy as regularly as they have. You'd be able to sort of just go the other way and start the other guy, your Vezina Trophy winner from 2 years ago, more regularly while Jeremy got his feet under him. They just don't have that luxury right now. And like I said, Korpisalo stabilized a little bit here after that tough start, but the numbers are still on the wrong side of expected, so still below league average. And they're obviously, I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the season he turns himself again into an asset for them and a positive asset. as a goaltender that I know that has a lot of skill and talent and is making adjustments not only to the system, and again, Boston defensively isn't what they used to be, but, you know, I think we tend to forget, like, Bob Asenzo, the goalie coach there, who all he does is turn goalies into good goalies. There are some things he asked his guys to do differently. And I know for Linus Ullmark, his first year in Boston, there was some pushback there. You know, he didn't want to add a little backwards flow off in zone play, or what they call recoil. You know, he was resistant to it. It's not how he grew up in Sweden. It's not how he played to any other point in his career. It wasn't until the second year that he became comfortable with those types of changes in his game and went on to win a Vezina trophy. And so asking a guy in Corpus Allo who's bounced around a fair bit the last little while to maybe make some of those changes, as much as you know they'll pay off in the long term, you know, you might be seeing a little bit of the short-term effects. Again, I think back to the Florida game, and there's a rush chance that gets tucked, you know, on a clean look around the dot, up over the shoulder, good shot, but he kind of lost his net on it. Again, because you're retreating or flowing differently than you might, costs you center net position and exposes a little more net for a good shooter. Those are the kind of little things that trying to make an adjustment in real time at the National Hockey League level will expose quickly, but they may pay off as the season goes on.
We've talked Boston goalies, Buffalo goalies. Those are the next two opponents for the Calgary Flames. On Monday, Los Angeles will be in Calgary. What are you seeing out of David Riddick right now in the Los Angeles Kings, who will be making an appearance here shortly at Scotiabank Saddledome?
Yeah, I'd be curious to see if it's Ridge that starts, because it has not been a great start to this season. And this is one where, you know, I can't blame the defensive environment. It's 12 points above the league average. It's close to 900. It's around where Dustin Wolf is right now. And he's really struggled. He's 60th out of 71 goalies that have played in the league, and adjusted save percentage, a full 3 percentage points below, almost the opposite where he was last season. He was so good for them last year that I wasn't worried about whether Kemper succeeded or not, because I thought Riddick should be able to pick up, you know, where he left off. Frankly, I thought they waited too long to go to him in the playoffs last year. And yet, for whatever reason, I can't put, you know, I can't pinpoint it, because the environment hasn't soured on him. He's really struggled at the start of this year. You know, one of the bottom, you know, 10, 11 guys in the league so far. Know the talent is capable of more, but the performances and the consistency just hasn't been there to this point. And Darcy Kemper's been a little more up and down. He's also underwater behind a good defensive environment, but he's had some performances. Like, there's been some blowouts that have kind of made his overall numbers look bad, but there's been some good performances in there as well. It'll be interesting to see how both of these guys come out of this. Kemper is making more adjustments behind a new team. I'm more surprised that Riddick is playing, you know, just to almost an extreme compared to last year from a results standpoint, because nothing else has changed, right? Like, it's still the same team, still the same personnel he's reading off in front of him. Yeah, maybe they're not as quite as tight defensively, and they're not as committed to the system they were playing last year. They've loosened things up a little bit, but the environment's still pretty friendly overall, and to see the numbers fall as far as they have since last season, frankly, you know, it's one that is a little perplexing and leaves you, you know, to sometimes cede to those that just scream that goaltending is voodoo, because this is one I can't figure out either.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine, NHL.com. Last one before we let you go, Kevin, and that's for Vancouver on Tuesday. The Flames will play against LA Monday, then fly into Vancouver to take on the Canucks Tuesday. Who, like, is there a chance Thatcher Demko might be ready for Tuesday against the Flames?
I feel like that might be a little early, but there is reports that he will be practicing, and he was out for some reps the other day in Los Angeles when they practiced yesterday at Crypto with teammates. Not a full practice, but, you know, we know he's been skating. We know he's been working with the goalie coach, but seeing him on video captured by reporters and even the team sharing it of him taking shots from teammates, so a little more dynamic situation, not just a completely controlled goaltender coach environment. It looks like he's a lot closer. Now, I think you're probably going to want him to get into 3, 4, maybe 5 full team practices, to get bumped around in the crease, to have traffic moving in and around him before you throw him into a game. We talked about Swayman and how tough it is to miss camp. Well, Thatcher has been out even longer, and unlike Jeremy, he wasn't able to go through a full August working with, you know, the captain skate environment, right, working with the goalie coach in that environment. He really has been off for a long period of time, so maybe they wait a little longer. But for the Canucks, encouraging news that he's this much closer to returning. I mean, the way Lankinen's going, a Lankinen-Demko tandem, assuming Thatcher gets back and can find that form, would be one of the best, if not the best, in the Western Conference. So that bodes well. I doubt it's by Tuesday. It will be interesting to see. Lankinen right now hasn't lost in regulation, and they just continue to ride him. If he wins tonight in Los Angeles, I would assume he starts against Edmonton on Saturday. Would they finally go back to Arturs against the Calgary Flames on Tuesday, or do they just keep riding the hot hand? I mean, Lankinen's at an over 60 games played pace, and normally I'd be like, that's too much for a guy who's never played more than, I think, 27 or 30 in the National Hockey League in any one season. But with Demko coming back, you know this isn't going to be the case long-term, and that eventually he'll settle into more of a 1B role, so you can afford to play the wheels off him right now. I'm kind of more curious in the short term how that looks and whether you see Lankinen or Seelovs. I would say Demko's unlikely, but it's not going to be much longer after that based on the way everything is going right now. The one thing I haven't seen in any of these videos, and the Canucks purposely keep him out of our eyes when they're at home. They just can't when they're on the road. So I haven't been able to see this in person. Post play and his ability to go in and out of the post into a reverse, which is ultimately how he injured the left side. I've seen some of it on the right side in this video. I haven't seen him go into that left post yet and come off of it. And to me, knowing for most goalies, it's the final step off a lower body injury is to do your post work, especially knees and ankles. And not having seen that on the side he injured yet, that might be one last hurdle he has to get through before he's back to a full team practice. But there sure were some signs yesterday that it's close.
Great stuff, as always, Kev. We always appreciate the insight, my friend. Thanks so much for doing that. We will talk to you next week, hey?
Perfect. Thanks, guys. Look forward to it. Enjoy the game tonight. And by the time I talk to you next week, I'll have seen your crew in person. So hopefully I'll have some more insights after conversations with both of them to share on how this is going so far.
Yes, absolutely. Looking forward to that, Kev. Be well, hey.
Thanks.
It's Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine, NHL.com, and he joins us every Thursday. He's our goaltending guru, and he joins us on Flames Talk on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, using the same secret recipe since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Enjoying the game at home? Call for pickup or delivery at 403-248-3344.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Rolling on this hour, it's a Thursday with Vickers. I'm Steinberg, and I do like the decision for the Flames to go to Dustin Wolf Thursday night in Boston. You know, I was very curious coming out of Tuesday's win, and I said this on postgame. I said, you're good going either way. I'd have no problem if they went to Vladar going against his former team. That would have been very interesting in Boston. But I did say Dustin played well enough and put together a good enough game that, you know, Vladar got rewarded getting his first consecutive starts. If they wanted to give Wolf a consecutive start, I'd have no problem with that because I thought it might be in the cards. That is the way they're going to go. And this is Jason LaBarbera. He is going to be on the coach's show on Thursday's pregame show. Spoke with Megan Mickelson. And here's what he had to say about kind of making that decision about alternating or deciding not to alternate in this case Thursday.
The good thing is they're making it hard on us, so, which is a good thing. That's what you want. Both guys have played well this year. There's you know, we had a plan the first 10 games and then, you know, you kind of adjust accordingly and you reward guys for having good starts, and that's what we've done the last couple games here. You know, Vladdy got a shutout against Jersey and played against Edmonton, and Wolfie was really good in Montreal, so he gets to play tonight. So it's going to be an ongoing decision-making process all year for sure, but, you know, hopefully they keep making it hard on us.
I really like that decision. I really do, Vix. I think that's a really good way of going about it. I think Dustin played well enough to earn his first consecutive start of the season. And I think you need to see, I think this is going to be a tandem all year. I really do. I think this is a tandem situation all season long, but that doesn't mean it's alternating one game to the next all year long either. They had a plan, you know, Jason would go on to say they had a plan through the first 10 games, and now it's kind of, let's see how it goes. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong. I remember Chad Johnson, Brian Elliott that one year. You know, both guys got nice little runs here and there. If Dustin Wolf at some point gets 5 of 6, I have no problem with that. If Ladar at some point gets 6 of 8, I got no problem with that at all. Like, I think that you have the option now because this is a tandem, but because goaltenders go in ebbs and flows just like everybody else, I think you've got the option to do some different things. So I like the fact they're going back to Wolf.
Yeah, you weren't going to see alternating starts forever. And the big question early on in the season is, well, what do you do if one goalie gets a shutout? Well, we saw that with Dan Vladar, as you mentioned, getting a shutout against the New Jersey Devils and his former mate in Jacob Markstrom. You roll with him right back the next game, and then you go to Dustin Wolf. And Wolf, if not Wolf in that first period against Montreal, I don't know if the Calgary Flames eke out a 3-2 victory. Made 15 saves in that first period when it looked like the Flames were
basically
overwhelmed by Montreal to start the game. He holds the fort, gives Calgary an opportunity to take a 1-0 lead, and that was something that, you know, it ended up being falling behind 2-1. Calgary ties it up, they win in overtime, so on and so forth. But it was really Dustin Wolf through the first 20 minutes of that game that gave the Flames an opportunity to stick around in order to come back and win. So if you have really strong starts, if you have a really strong start, why not go back with the guy that gave that to you? We're a month into the season now. We heard Jason LaBarbera talk about they had a 10-game plan to start the season. And now that we're sort of in the minutiae of a season and you can start going by vibes and you can start going by feel, if you have a goaltender, whether it's Vladar, whether it's Wolf, starting to put together consecutive games of outplaying the guy at the other end and stealing periods or stealing games, I totally get the logic of we're past the alternating portion of our schedule. Now let's turn this into a pure competition now that both goaltender and competition doesn't mean they have to butt heads or anything like that. It's,
right.
It's if you get hot, you stay in. And at times it's going to be Wolf. At times it's going to be Vladar. That's just the nature of how the season works in ebbs and flows. But now you've gotten past the point of you're guaranteed this start, you're guaranteed that start. Now the competition heats up. And I think that's a really positive thing for the Calgary Flames tandem.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, Vix, let's get to the big news of the hockey world to wrap up this hour. Big news on this Thursday. See, I told you my days just really, really poor at knowing what day it is. This has been brewing for some time. I don't think this comes as a surprise because we've been waiting for this or waiting for this to become official, but it is now indeed official. The NCAA has passed a rule starting next season. So for the 25-26 season, this goes into effect on August 1st, 2025. So this August, Canadian Hockey League players will be eligible to play in the NCAA. Prior to that, the minute that you played up until right now and up until August 1st, the minute you play a CHL game, even a CHL preseason game, your NCAA eligibility no longer exists. That has changed. Starting next season, Canadian Hockey League players will be able to play in the NCAA, will be able to go and get scholarships, so on and so forth. This is all part of the changing landscape of college sports south of the border. The name, image, likeness rule that got put into place a couple of years ago, the transfer portal changes as well. You know, it's been the NCAA landscape with their big sports, obviously football, basketball, and then everything else after that. The changes that have been put in place in the NCAA over the last number of years are the most drastic and sweeping we've ever seen in the history of that multi-billion dollar organization. Now players can get paid. And if guys are going to be able to get paid and make money off their NIL name, image, likeness, and then you're still going to bar guys from coming to the NCAA because they're playing in the CHL, it just doesn't mesh up. So from an NCAA standpoint, this makes a ton of sense. North of the border, I am fascinated and honestly a little worried about what this means for the state of junior hockey in this country. Less so worried about the Canadian Hockey League, more so worried about the other junior leagues, the Alberta Junior Hockey League, the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League, the USHL, even south of the border. That's what really starts to concern me, because up until now, you went junior A, so USHL, AJHL, like, you know, or what some call tier two, but you went junior A in this country, or you went USHL south of the border to keep your college eligibility, and you went Western League if maybe you were a little bit more physically mature, a little bit more ready, and also if you were looking to fast track to pro hockey. And now the waters are significantly muddied. I'm not saying this will be bad for the AJHL, or this will be bad for the SJ, or this will be bad for the USHL, but I'm sure as hell concerned it will be.
Yeah, the biggest recruiting tool that those tier two leagues, again, whether it's in Canada or it's the USHL for the United States, the biggest recruiting tool they had is you get to maintain your college eligibility. So if you're looking for a place to play and you're too good for midget, or you're too good for wherever you're at, and you've committed to a Div 1 school, well, then the logical place for you to go play was in junior A. Again, whether it's AJHL, BCHL, OJHL, as you mentioned, the USHL down in the States. Well, now all of a sudden, you're eligible, you're fine to go to the Canadian Hockey League, whether it be the Q, the O, or the Western Hockey League, and still maintain that NCAA eligibility. So I think the first place my mind goes when seeing this deal go through is, yeah, what does it mean for the USHL, for example? We've seen ample number of Canadians go play in the USHL. Owen Power, Macklin Celebrini, Michael Hag. You go through the list, they're going down to the USHL because they think it's the best path for development and buy some time to get to the NCAA. Now, if you go to the CHL, you still have that option to play 1 or 2 years in the Western Hockey League, for example, and then go to Michigan if that happens to be your commitment of choice.
I'm just reading our buddy Stephen Ellis over at Daily Faceoff's got a great write-up of this. I know that Scott Wheeler at the Athletic's done a lot of reporting, Ryan Kennedy at the Hockey News and more, but just reading Stephen's piece over at Daily Faceoff, you know, suggests that some of the top available prospects for the OHL this coming year, they did not sign deals in the OHL because they wanted to keep NCAA eligibility alive. Does that change? You know, here in the Western League, what does this mean for Landon DuPont? Is that a guy who decides to stay in the Western League, or does he decide to go NCAA because he can now? And it's just, it's fascinating because I don't know what the best option is for a guy like Landon DuPont. Like, how much do you want a degree compared to, or start your degree compared to how much do you want to make the NHL as an 18-year-old, right?
Right.
So I don't know if it makes a big difference for those guys. And honestly, I don't know if this is a big hit for, say, the Western League. I don't know if this is a big hit for them, because now all of a sudden, guys that wouldn't have gone to the Western League as 16, 17-year-olds and played junior A to retain their NCAA eligibility, maybe they now play in the Western League. Now a guy that would have said no to the Calgary Hitmen, maybe he decides to play for the Calgary Hitmen for a couple of years before he goes to college, which could end up being good and give you more 16, 17-year-old talent in Canadian Major Junior. Like, it could end up being a good thing as much as a bad thing for Major Junior.
If I were to sit here and project and guess and predict what this does for the Canadian Hockey League, I think it does make the Q and the O and the Dub skew a little bit younger, and you see more and more 19 and 20 year olds who have graduated high school then take advantage of the ability to jump to the NCAA. So your talent pool for Major Junior in Canada suddenly becomes a little bit younger, whereas the NCAA is just able to absorb those players that have graduated high school and are looking to maybe continue their hockey career without having to continue it at a pro level. Maybe they don't feel physically ready, or their skills aren't developed to a point. Well, you can buy yourself a whole lot more time by making the jump to the NCAA. Whereas, okay, if you're starting to lose 20-year-olds, you're overagers, which there aren't that many, to be honest with you. Each team carries three. But then I wonder if that affects your 19-year-old crop as well, which means suddenly your 17 and 18-year-olds are your more dominating force in that league. The other thing to consider, too, is this is more from an NHL perspective, but the signing window is now interesting in terms of you get 4 years for NCAA players if you're an NHL team. You get 2 years for CHL players before they become free agents. So how does that element get navigated as well? Are they going to find a way in the next CBA to bridge that difference? Is it suddenly it was 2 years, but now all of a sudden you get an extra 2 years tacked onto your prospect if he makes the jump to the NCAA. All these things will be sorted out in time, but that's just another wrinkle that pops to mind when I sit here and I see this deal come through and I'm going, okay, this is how it might affect the league. This is how it's going to affect the player. And I think it's nothing but positive for a player. The more options you have as a player, the better. But how does it affect leagues? How does it affect players? And then how does it affect NHL teams?
Let me read you a few statements. This from the CHL, starting first with them. The Canadian Hockey League, along with its member leagues, are aware of the rule change announced earlier today by the NCAA, which alters the eligibility of CHL players, allowing them to play Div 1 hockey starting next season. While we take time to fully review this rule change, we believe this is a positive development that will provide our players with more opportunities to continue their hockey and academic careers following their time in the CHL. It'll also give young players and their families more options in choosing their development path, which includes opening up the CHL, the best development hockey league in the world, for players aged 16 to 20, to more players worldwide. For 55 consecutive years, the CHL has been the number one supplier of talent to the NHL. At the beginning of this campaign, there were 390 CHL graduates on NHL rosters, marking once again the most of any development league in the world. Additionally, at last summer's 2024 NHL draft, the CHL led the way as 88 players were drafted, including 14 in the first round. We remain strongly committed to carrying on that tradition of success on the ice while embracing the enhanced academic options that this rule change will present off the ice. In the past and in recent years, you had an option to go play U Sports hockey after your CHL career, and the CHL and in this case the Western League would provide the scholarships and schooling for your time in U Sports commensurate to how many years you played in the Western League. So you had the option. If you were a 4-year Western Leaguer, you had the option to go be a 4-year U Sports player after the fact. Now this changes that a little bit as well. This comes from the Western League. So this is the statement from the Western Hockey League and their commissioner, Dan Neer. It says, today's announcement that CHL players will now be eligible to compete in NCAA D1 hockey beginning next season represents a historic and consequential outcome that'll be celebrated by all those invested in the on- and off-ice development of young players. This decision creates opportunity for the brightest elite hockey players in Western Canada and the Western U.S. to now choose the WHL as the preferred destination for their development from the age of 16 to 20 without fear of compromising their NCAA eligibility. As always, the player is at the heart of what we do across the WHL through our 22 member clubs. Most of our graduates note their time in the dub were the best years of their lives. We're thrilled that upon graduation from the Western League, players will have additional options as they pursue the next step in their personal and hockey journey. We look forward to the opportunity to welcome a new wave of talent, and we take great pride in our responsibility to support all WHL players in the pursuit of their goals, be that on the ice, in the classroom, and as contributing members of the community. Players completing their eligibility with the Western League will continue to receive access to our leading post-secondary scholarship funded by our 22 member clubs. In the 23-24 season, the education bills for over 300 Western League alumni were paid directly by the league and clubs, totaling in excess of $3 million in funding. The WHL is proud to continue this practice. The best in the West can now look forward to chasing their dreams alongside one another in the world's finest development league for junior hockey players, the Western Hockey League. That comes from the WHL. So, you know, both the CHL and the Western League's releases, they look at this as quite a positive development as well, because now they're no longer limited to the type of players they get. The more I think about this, the more you understand that, yeah, this is a real significant step forward for major junior in this country, I think.
The only counterpoint I think that could be brought to that is if you have a player who is a high-end draft pick in an NCAA school, wants to add him to the program right away, you are able to now send them NIL money as a motivating factor, as opposed to sticking around in the Canadian Hockey League and earning
your stipend. I do think your point about them being starting to skew younger is
I think that's absolutely what's going to happen for a number of different factors. But the fact of the fact remains, we won't know the impact of it. We won't even necessarily know it next season. Like, this is going to be something that once you get 3 or 4 years out from, and everybody's figured out the minutia of what this means for the CHL, Tier 2, the NCAA, I don't think we'll fully be able to draw a conclusion that this group benefited or that group you know, didn't benefit or really hurt this league or that league, so on and so forth. But it does open up a lot of possibility for a lot of players. And I think at the end of the day, that's what needed to happen.
Yeah. I'm looking now, for some of the junior A leagues in this country, if there's any,
the other thing too is, does it expand
responses?
Does it expand NCAA? Is there an expansion in NCAA? If you're anticipating a bunch of 19 and 20 year old Canadians from the CHL, does that allow the NCAA program as a whole to expand? Because all of a sudden you've got more of an influx of players of our pool to draw from for players. And all of a sudden, does that allow you to open up more programs and create more opportunity, both for Canadians that want to jump to the NCAA level, but also for the Americans that might have previously had a spot taken from them from these CHL players? And that's not saying all CHL players are Canadian. There's plenty of American-born players in the CHL. But to that point, you're going to get an influx of 19 and 20-year-old Canadians looking to make the jump to NCAA, potentially limiting the spots of other players that had previously committed.
So far, the AJ, the SJ, the CJHL, I have not seen a response or a statement from them. USHL does have a statement out, however, doesn't really give their take on it. This is the USHL, which is essentially the top junior A league in the... It's equivalent in some ways to the CHL, but you keep your college eligibility by playing in the USHL. The USHL says this: since its inception, the United States Hockey League development model has been holistically and intentionally aligned with the student-athlete experience. The USHL remains the world's premier development path. All aspects of the league are focused on preparing athletes for collegiate and professional hockey, inclusive of on-ice academic and character development. The USHL claims more than half of NCAA Division I men's ice hockey players while producing more NHL draft picks than any other league in the world over the past 8 seasons. The USHL prepares players by providing them exposure, resources, and experiences that empower young men for peak success. Doesn't really give you where their thought process is right now.
No, and again, I think this is going to be unique to each league as well in sorting out how this absolutely impacts you, and until you go through it and until you live it and either benefit from it or you see a lack of a benefit from it, this isn't a reaction that's going to happen on November 7th to get to that ultimate decision of how does this impact me.
I want to read as many texts as we can quickly before we wrap up this hour. This says, does this make a big change for the Okotoks, Oilers, Brooks Bandits, etc. that went to the BCHL? Yep, absolutely. Because as much as they're not affiliated with Hockey Canada in the BCHL anymore, they still retain, they still were the junior A route,
right?
And you still retained college eligibility, etc. So I think that is absolutely a group of teams that get impacted. This says, I think the change will have the most negative impact on U Sports or CIS after playing in the CHL. I think more players will head south for a better level of hockey. That's another important thing, is that, you know, how many 21-year-olds, 20-year-olds go to play in the NCAA if they get scholarship offers all of a sudden, right? Like that also is really interesting. And like, and I don't know all the minutiae, but like, if you're, say that you don't go to school, like say that, like, you're like, I'm probably not going to make the NHL, but I'm going to just focus on playing Western League hockey until I'm 20. Once I age out, or maybe there's not a spot for me as an overager in the Western League, well, then maybe I sign a scholarship and, you know, can you be a 20-year-old freshman, so on and so forth. Like, those are interesting things as well that I think need to be taken into account.
Yeah. Or if you play 2 years at U Sport and then magically have found a way to play in the NCAA, what does that do for your years and your eligibility on that front as well? Like, these are questions I honestly don't have the answer to, but I'm curious to see how it unfolds.
This will be absolutely devastating for the U Sports programs. This says,
I guess my only counter, the flip side to that, would be not every player is going to want to move away from where they currently live. Like, if you're a Calgary Hitmen member, for example, and you want to stay in Calgary, your family's from the area, you might not necessarily be enticed to go the NCAA route. You might be fine with the University of Calgary, or if you're from the Edmonton region, going to the U of A.
And this says, guys, great decision. I think this will, the league that'll be most hurt is U Sports in Canada. So that's just a little bit of our text line on this one at 960-960. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on the program. Thanks to Shan and Cam, our producers, and Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. You can get him on Twitter anytime. Lots of risque pictures that Vicks posts of himself on Twitter. Okay, maybe not.
What?
your blank stare on that, and then you're like, wait, what did he just say?
Wait, I heard that correctly.
You did.
I did.
No risque pictures, I promise. That'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.